Well, I have reached an age where a lot of my conversations revolve around my ailments. I think some of you are with me on that. But I've been having some weird back trouble of late. Lori noticed it because a lot of the times during my sermons, I'll just be leaning on the altar. And maybe that's a good place to be leaning, really. But it's been causing me a lot of trouble. And so I finally got to the doctor this week, and I knew they were just going to say something like, "It's just because you're fat." And I was planning on hearing that. But as it turned out, when I got to the doctor, they had the x-rays done. And what they told me is that there is a small fracture in one of my lower vertebrae. And what happened was, sometime when I was younger, between zero and now, I had this fracture happen, unbeknownst to me, that this occurred. But what happened is there is some arthritis that has formed as a result of all of that, plus you're fat. It's kind of what they told me. They didn't say that. The Kaiser doesn't say that, but they've been handing me like a lot of brochures when I come in. That's all. Anyway, I couldn't figure it out. I don't remember a time when I broke my back. That seems like something I would remember. And then I thought back to when I was a year younger than Jack. I was two. I really just know the stories. I don't remember it so well. But there was a time when my mom was walking down the stairs with me, and the story goes that she kind of tripped and we fell down the stairs together. Now, I've given her a hard time about that my entire life, that, you know, it sure seemed like you didn't get hurt when I went down the stairs that one time. Are you sure that's the way it went? So I would always give her a hard time. And I said, maybe that's it, since I don't remember. And it's given it time to cause this arthritis. So I texted my mom and I just said, "Mom, did I hurt my back when you threw me down the stairs?" It took her a long time to write back to that one. But I couldn't figure it out. And unfortunately, what it means is that probably for the rest of my life, I'm going to be dealing with some sort of pain there. And there's management tools that they have for it. But what I really was looking forward to, truthfully, was that they would say, like, "Let's prep you for surgery right now." Because I would love to get that cut off and dealt with, you know. Surgical precision, fix your back, right? I need a bacchiotomy. Do whatever it takes to fix my back. But that's not the case. It's going to be something for life. And I just needed that surgeon to come in and say, let's get into the OR right now, right? These readings this week are really hard. And I have to say, if I were picking the readings for our special Water Fun Day, these would not be them. I'd pick something along the lines of, like, "Everybody, let's go out there and have some fun." First of all, it deals with this idea of, like, fire a lot. And the gospel especially has this real sense of division. It's a hard one to hear. I've said it before, but if I was Jesus' public relations guy, I'd kind of tell him to dial this stuff down. You know, it's usually when he says stuff like this that it says that some of the followers stopped following. And I would have to kind of say, you know, maybe Jesus, let's focus on the best life now, like the good moments, right, of life. So, but Jesus doesn't seem to shy away from the difficult things. This idea of not peace, but division, not peace, but a fire that he brings, is very, very difficult to hear. Until you get to something like going through Genesis, which is what I'm doing right now. I'm going through Genesis at home, and the first couple chapters are pretty good. Things go downhill fast. And what happens is you kind of read it, and you read, like, it goes from this one sin of disobedience to God to, like, murder in a few verses. It's incredible. And then you start to think about the world around us, and you kind of go, that's about right. You know, that seems to be sort of the direction. And what Genesis looks like so often is this idea of, what would it be like if we were in charge of our own souls? What would it look like if we got to make the rules? And usually what happens is somebody's building an enormous pillar to reach heaven, and things fall apart, or the world gets so wrecked that God flushes everyone out. I mean, there are all these moments where sin enters into the world and it just festers and it snowballs into this total depravity. And like I said, I'm reading it and I kind of look around and I say, that seems about right. There's a line from the book of Judges that is this refrain throughout, and many of you know it, is in those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. That's not a good thing to read. Bad things happen because when people do what's right in their own eyes, depravity rules. And so when you get to a gospel like today's, kind of makes sense. You know, that gospel reading, if Jesus were to say everyone's fine and keep on doing what you're doing, I don't think we would like that God. Truly, would you really want a God who comes down here and says, A-okay, keep on going and doing what you're doing, and everything seems right? In the same way that someone like Dietrich Bonhoeffer would talk about cheap grace, that's a cheap holiness. That's a cheap God that would come down here and say, everything looks just about right, keep on going. Because it does not speak to the holiness of God, the perfection of God, the power and the purity of God, if he were to walk in our midst and say, everything looks fine. Consider for a moment when Isaiah encounters the living God and he cowers in the corner and says, woe to me, I'm ruined. That's what holiness looks like in the midst of regular, unholy life. Holiness and depravity do not coexist. It's like wheat and chaff. And that division comes like a sword. Would we want a God that demonstrates an unholiness like that? And further, would we want a God that would demonstrate such an unloving character? Because sometimes love means saying the hard stuff. Sometimes love means saying what you are doing is not right. This is why Satan is so unloving in the garden. Because he says, oh, this is all going to be good for you. Love has boundaries. Love has borders. And love says the hard stuff. Sometimes it might not feel that way. Sometimes it might feel like we're not very liked, but we are truly always loved. Sometimes we endure discipline, and we go back to this reminder that as children, we endure the discipline of a parent because the parent knows best. And that's why it's such good news that he says, not peace, but I'm here to light the world on fire. And he says this, look around. You guys know the weather so clearly. Oh, it looks like a storm's coming through. It's a nor'easter on the horizon. And people seem to be able to predict something as maybe complex as the weather, but at least so surface area as the weather. But the spiritual temperature is something that we're not so good at taking. We don't want to look around and get a forecast for our depravity. So we can look around and we know so clearly what's going on in the weather and the world about us, but we don't look at what's going on inside or all around us with the spiritual condition of our world. And Jesus says, you fools, wake up, look around, take a forecast, know what's going on in front of you. We pass a sign on the way into Fallbrook every time, and it's got that arm that changes as the seasons change in Fallbrook, and it goes from fire danger low to what now is all the way on the other side of the sign, fire danger extreme. And I think that's a pretty good image of what Jesus seems to be saying here. Look around. Take the temperature. The world is kindling. The wheat and the chaff have grown up together and are now ready for that harvest. The time for weeds and wheat to be separated has come, and what happens to the chaff? It burns. And Jesus says, I am here to bring a fire. He talks about that baptism that he is coming to experience. And boy, I wish that fire was already kindled. Well, what is he talking about? He's talking about what's happening in the next couple of chapters in Luke. What is always in front of him, that shadow of the cross. He is headed up the hill. And I love in Luke how over and over we are reminded, while Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus is always on his way to Jerusalem, always on his way to the hillside, always on the way to the cross. Because that is the fire of this world. And would it be so bad if it burned? Jesus speaks so openly about that separation of the wheat from the chaff, that separation of the impurity to the purified gold. He's talked so often about division from the goats and the sheep and all of this to make it very, very clear that salvation is like a surgical process. There is a precise cutting, and it comes from the cross of Christ. Jesus, our great physician, works with that spiritual, surgical precision to separate, not peace, but a sword. Now, so often, if you were to take a spiritual temperature of our world, they might not always love the church, but if they were to speak of Jesus, they often say he's all about love. Yes, that's true. But often that love is hard. Often that love means some sort of cutting, some sort of removal, some sort of division or fire to purify that gold, that silver, to bring it to the surface and to remove the impurities. The question is really not in Jesus' character here. The real question for us is, what will you do with this cross of Christ? What is it that you will do with this sword that is raised up? What will you do with the cross? That great meeting place of the love of God and the holiness of God met in the mercy of that moment. Not peace, but division. Division is okay. That division is wonderful. That division speaks to his holiness and his love. So what will you do with the cross? Jesus came to bring fire to the earth, to light this world on fire. And he says, I wish it was already kindled. It's been kindled. So what will you do with that cross?